Our next guest is concerned that schools are missing something important when it comes to teaching literacy, the fact that reading can be fun.
And he says we should be encouraging that love of reading. One way to do that, let kids pick the books they want to read and let the kids read them.
Joining us now is Michael Smith, professor of education at Temple University and a former high school teacher. He's co-author of the new book, Reading Unbound, Why Kids Need to Read What They Want and Why We Should Let Them. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
I'm glad to be here.
So you seem to say that in this culture of being concerned about literacy and making sure kids can compete on the global stage, that we're losing track of something when we introduce kids to reading. And that's fun. What makes you think that?
Well, it's not just in the introduction to reading. It's as they go through. It's when people talk about what reading does, what does for you in terms of career, in terms of college, and those kinds of things, and don't really focus on the pleasure that readers get from the act of reading, and that's what motivates lifelong reading. And so we decided that we wanted to look more carefully to see if we could understand more about the nature and variety of pleasures that kids take from the reading that they do.
Now, for your book, you studied the out-of-school reading habits of a group of eighth graders. What did they tell you about why they read what they did?
Well, we found that that they talked about reading, the pleasure they got from reading, in really four different ways. One was what we call play pleasure, and they talked about how it felt, how the reading was really almost physical act for them because they so deeply entered the story world that they were reading. They could see them, they could smell them, they could feel them. Perhaps our most moving finding, or one of the things that's certainly staying with me, having finished the book, is that they did, their reading allowed them to do sort of important psychological work. It's, they read to try to figure out the kind of person that they wanted to be and to try to figure out how to get to be that person. We call it inner work in the book. And that was an important thing that ran through all of the interviews that we did. Then they took pleasure to intellectual pleasure in figuring things out, and they took social pleasure. They used the reading. You know, reading is so often thought of as a solitary activity, but the kids that we talked to, they used their reading to affiliate with others, other readers. The friendship circles were built up around reading. So it's very interesting to see that sort of contrast between, I think, what is a conventional notion of reading being something that you do alone, to the idea that reading is really a very social act.
So when I was in high school and junior high, the way that reading was taught was that everybody pretty much read the same book. There were different classes, and they may have had a different reading schedule, but everyone read the same book, and then we discussed it and tried to, as a class, sort of figure out what the meaning was. What do you think about that way of teaching reading based against your findings?
Well, I think that there is a power to shared experiences, and the kids in our study were we're very interested in talking about how they like to talk with other people and get multiple perspectives on the reading that they did. So I think that there's a place for that. But I think that there's also a place for giving kids, even in school, giving kids lots of choice so that they can put their reading that they're choosing to do in relationship to the reading that they're doing in common.
Now, you talked about a couple of reasons that these kids wanted to read the stuff they did when they weren't in school. One of them was play and inhabiting these magical worlds, and another was trying to figure out what kind of person they wanted to be. What kind of books did they read that fell into those categories?
Well, one of the things that was interesting to us is that what the kids took out of their reading was similar, but the books that they read were very, very different. The kids in the study was a reader of dark fiction, books like Fight Club, and that's what she read. On the other hand, we had readers of romance. But both of them, both the reader of dark fiction and the reader of romances or vampire stories, found these same sorts of pleasures in the reading that they did. So it wasn't so much that they shared particular things that they read. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons we think choice is so important is that you can't really predict what it is that kids will gravitate to, but rather that what the fantasy readers got out of fantasy was in many ways similar to what the readers of horror got out of reading horror, and what the readers of vampire novels got out of reading vampire novels.
So assigning a book to read for a class, it seems like, you know, the kids may or may not read it, and you could go online and just read the synopsis somewhere, get the crib notes. But what about the question about how schools are teaching it? Is that the wrong way to teach, or are schools maybe creating an aversion to reading when they teach to a single book like that?
Well, I think that there are, obviously it depends on the school, but one of the things that our kids told us is that schools, in their view, tended to sort of force books to mean particular things. They talked about how they sort of narrowed their horizons, if you will. And it was really ironic because we saw kids doing with their out-of-school reading many of the kinds of things that are celebrated in school. You know, they were looking for themes, they were studying authors' techniques, and so on. But they felt sometimes that school forced them down particular channels, and they resisted that. So I would say that, as I said before, I don't think that there's anything particularly wrong with having some reading done in common, but I think we should surround that teachers should think about surrounding that reading with reading that kids get to choose.
Is that how schools can inject the fun factor into it? What is the best way to do that?
Well, I think that we make a variety of suggestions for possible approaches. So let's take one. I talked about this idea of using books to really think about the kind of person that you wanted to become. One of the kids said something like, she said, "What I do when I'm facing a problem is I think about my favorite characters, and I think about how they would handle this problem, and then I choose." From what they would do, I choose the one that I think is right for me. Then she closed that turn in the interview by saying, characters are just ways of thinking, really. But if you think about, one of the things I think sometimes happens in schools is we don't use books to talk about those kinds of issues. So one of the suggestions that we make for fostering this kind of pleasure of inner work is to read text that raise important questions like what makes me me? Is it genetics? Is it personal interest? Is it race? Is it class? Those are big issues. Or to what extent are people responsible for what happens to them? Those are big questions that reading can help kids answer. And grappling with those questions, and they're questions that don't have any defined answers, so they don't sort of force readers into taking the same thing out of a text. So one of the suggestions we make is to build our instruction not around sort of technical issues, but rather around these bigger questions, these bigger essential questions that motivate people out of school reading.
Now, to go back to that student that you just mentioned who said she has a problem in her life, she'll go to a book and try to think about a way a particular character might handle it, and then she closed by saying that characters are just ways of thinking about things. That's a pretty sophisticated way to think about a book. Do you think that, you know, maybe we're not giving kids enough credit when it comes to their sophistication level and why they may be reading what they're reading?
We were astonished at what... I mean, that girl was an eighth grader. I mean, we were astonished at the sophistication of the thinking that they were doing about their reading. And yeah, I think that's right. I think. Well, you know what? I've been teaching for a long time now. I've been teaching for 36 years, and I was taught lessons for sure about how kids were engaging in reading. And I think back in the teaching that I did, I was so worried about what, you know, my kids were reading, I don't know, Sweet Valley High back then, romances, that kind of thing. What we found in our study is that rather than dismiss that, what we should try to find out what they're getting out of that. We found kids who were committed readers of vampire stories who are using vampire stories as a way to think about what kind of relationships they wanted in the world. So, yeah, I think that I certainly, as a teacher, did not give my kids enough credit for what they were doing with the reading that they were doing outside of class.
We're talking right now with Michael Smith, author of Reading Unbound, and he's making the case that we should let kids read what they'd like to read. What do you think about that idea? If you're a teacher, is this what you do? Do you let your kids direct the choices that they make and promote the idea that reading is fun and that one of the joys in life is the pleasure we get from reading? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking now with Michael Smith, who says we should let kids read what they'd like to read and encourage their love of reading as one of the fundamental pleasures of life and also a tool for literacy. And we want to hear from you. Do you think that kids should read what they like? Do you let your kids choose what they like to read? And what's their reaction? You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And if you're a teacher, we'd like to hear from you too. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Michael, one thing I'm curious about is whether you think that as a society, as parents, as teachers, are we too worried about kids being exposed to what you might call literature in quotes versus, you know, just reading a book they like? Do we want to make sure that they are reading literature?
I think that if we take pleasure seriously, what we're best served by, schools are best served by two things. One, having kids, creating context in which kids can read text that they're likely to take pleasure from, and two, to increase the range of texts that kids might take pleasure in, so, you know, like expanding their palate. So I think we should do both. I think, however, that the latter goal really dominates in school. I can tell just a quick personal story. When my younger daughter was in 12th grade, I went to her back to school night, and her 12th grade English teacher rattled off the books that they were going to read and then said something like this: "But since we know they're going to hate all of the reading that they have to do, we show a lot of movies in here." That's probably the wrong message to give a kid in an English class.
Yeah, that's interesting. So if some teachers know that the kids are going to hate the literature, what's stopping them from changing it?
Well, you know, there are a number of pressures now that I understand. One is the Common Core state standards put a really strong emphasis on text complexity. They argue that kids aren't prepared. One of the reasons kids are not prepared for college is that they're not reading hard enough things in high school. One of the arguments we make in the book is that we need to think not only about textual complexity, but also interpretive complexity. Our kids were doing amazingly complicated work with text that people might regard as not being likely to provoke that kind of serious intellectual work. So that's one pressure. I think that there's another pressure about cultural, the idea that if they don't read it then, when are they going to read it? If they don't read Shakespeare in high school, when are they going to read it?
Well, what about that? Is there anything to that? Because maybe that is the only time someone might be exposed to Shakespeare.
Well, if that's the case, then we ought to read Shakespeare in such a way that kids may be more apt to read it, or at least go to a play sometime in the future. Spending a month going line by line through a play that could be performed in a couple of hours, it might not be the best way to do that.
So maybe new approaches to teaching the material.
And putting it in creating sort of textual conversations between the classic texts and other kinds of texts. So, one of the questions I think Romeo and Juliet raises, for example, is what sustains and interferes with love relationships? Well, so a lot of romance novels, vampire novels, are about that too. So we can engage kids in thinking deeply about the central questions raised by classic texts, and that, I think, enlivens the discussion that they might have about those texts.
I want to go to the phones now. Let's go to Patty, who's with us from Green Bay. Hey, Patty.
Hi. I love this conversation. I'm lucky that I have two boys that like to read, but our oldest, he didn't like to read initially, like in his early years, and we read a lot out loud to him. And he wanted to go to see Prisoner of Azkaban, one of the Harry Potter's movies.
Uh-huh.
And we told him he had to read it before he could go see it. And that was kind of a struggle. It was a situation where we decided to get him the compact disc, the book on tape, the audiobook. And he just fell in love with the audiobooks. And Jim Dale is the narrator for all those Harry Potter books.
Yeah, yeah.
And it opened up a whole new world of adventure for him. It opened up a love of reading. He started wanting to read them himself. I mean, now he's a big John Gresham guy, you know, and he's a senior in high school now, and he does really well reading. He doesn't have any problems. He's in all the AP classes for language and comp. But, you know, we found that we had to just approach it differently. With our youngest, he absorbs all the books that are around him. He read the whole Redwall series, and the neighbor kids, they built forts for Redwall in our backyard last year, and we did a Redwall this fall. And actually, they have a Redwall cookbook, and we used the recipes out of the Redwall cookbook.
Wow. So maybe he saw his big brother reading, too, huh?
Yeah, he did. And it became a big neighborhood event, this Redwall feast. So.
Oh, that's so cool, Patty. Thank you for telling your story and sharing that. And let's look at Patty's oldest, who was reluctant to start reading. They had to kind of prod him, it sounds like. But it makes you wonder, how many kids are out there who just never got hooked on that right book initially that showed them what reading could be?
And that's a great question. One of the things we found with the committed readers, they like what you said about that series books. That's why people shouldn't read or worry about series books, because there's such pleasure involved in getting into a series. And even though one of the things that we found with the readers of Harry Potter that was so interesting is that when they finished reading a book and they took pleasure in reading the book, there was also a tremendous amount of pleasure waiting for the next book, thinking what was going to happen. So series books provide a kind of pleasure that other kinds of books don't, because there's that pleasure of anticipation and figuring out what directions the writer might be taking the series. That also contributes to why people enjoy them so much.
Well, Patty, thank you so much for that call. And we go next to Ken, joining us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
I was telling your screener, I have a 17-year-old son who we started him on, again, the Harry Potter series. And with the first book, this year for Christmas, he asked for a gift card to Barnes & Noble. And assuming that he was going to buy his music or whatever, he spent $100 on books.
Wow.
And the thing that gets me now is we do not censor what he reads. We let him read whatever he wants. And if he's got questions, he asks them. And if he's got, you know, plot line or subject line issues, he'll ask them. And he has gotten into an author named Christopher Rice, who writes detective novels, and his detective is gay. And my son thinks that's the most interesting thing in the world. Although he doesn't seem to have those proclivities, he really likes that genre. And, you know, I'm glad that he's a reader. But the Harry Potter series, Stephen King, he really likes, and Christopher Rice. And I enjoy the subject, and, you know, I'm really glad that I've got a reader in the family.
Okay, Ken, thank you so much for that call, too. So $100 on books for Christmas, that says something about the love of reading there. And Ken isn't censoring at all. Is that something parents should think about practicing at a certain age? I don't know if middle schoolers still need some guidance about reading things about subjects that might be too difficult for them to handle yet. But do you think in general that's a good rule of thumb, don't censor?
Well, one of the things that I learned from our study is to try to find out what they're getting from the books that they're reading. For example, when I was worried when I was a teacher that the girls in my class were reading these romances that were teaching them. I taught in a working class high school that were teaching them to be sort of submissive. What I found from doing this study is that the girls who were reading romances did not take on a submissive role, but were rather, or embrace that, but were rather using those books to think about, as a way to exert sort of power and to think about the power in a relationship and the kind of relationships that they wanted. So I know in my own case that I have made mistakes in presuming why people were reading something, instead of finding out and talking with them about why they were reading something.
Let's go next to Anita in Gurnee, Illinois. Hi, Anita.
Hi. Coming from an old Irish family, it was instilled in me very early, the value of reading, where Irish Catholics were not allowed to be educated, not allowed to be read, and actually my grandfather taught himself to read by hiding books up in the hillsides under rocks, and so it was like that. And I think in today's world, we look around, we know much more about what's happening, especially with women and education and reading. And I think when some of the assigned materials are being assigned in classes, you know, somewhere along the way there, whether it's in their sociology classes, geography, or indeed in the liberal arts classes, that it needs to be brought home how lucky we are, and especially it being almost obligatory on American women and Western women of all kinds to know that reading is, it is a right, but not for all, and that it needs to be really valued as such, the fact that we are allowed to do that, and then introduce the horrible assigned reading that the young kids don't want to read. And I think it's not so much entertaining them now that's important. They might hate it. I did not like reading All Quiet on the Western Front when I was younger. But believe me, you know, I'm in my 60s now. When Vietnam came around, oh, wow, could have had a V8.
All right, Anita, thank you so much for that call and for sharing your points there. And as we wind up here, Mike, I want to ask you, what is the takeaway here for parents as they figure out what their kids should be reading?
I would say that to treat the reading choices that they're making with respect, not to worry so much about whether this is a book that they're going to read in college or whether it's going to help them in school, but to recognize that readers read books that they need, you know, that support them in doing something important to them. That's the big takeaway that that I took from our study.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate the time.
That was Michael Smith, co-author of the book Reading Unbound, Why Kids Need to Read What They Want and Why We Should Let Them.